Welcome back.
Hello, everyone.
hello, hello.
Hello, hello. There is another voice here. We have a guest today. his name is Raymond. He will, I guess, introduce yourself later after our intro. But welcome back to our 20, I don't know when this is coming out, but like
Fifth.
20 something like
Oh,
that
actually
episode.
six. Maybe it's 26.
Maybe. That's wild. But yeah. So how is everyone doing?
I'll go first. Well, so yesterday I went to IKEA and I got this like peg board and I finally get to like decorate my room. So I'm really happy and like I just really want to stay in my room now because it looks really nice.
A mood. How about you, Raymond?
Good. I had a good day, just resting, kind of forcing myself to rest because I've been working a lot, so. But I'm doing great.
Good. I'm glad. Yeah, I've been well. Life is going. What have I done recently? Oh, so my friends and I like have been playing this like kind of like D&D role play game, but like in the world of Avatar, The Last Airbender. So it's been really fun. We play like every Sunday and we like to do it online and
Oh.
stuff. But then yesterday, which is also the reason why I thought I would be late. Like we were supposed to record yesterday and we all just kind of like was like let's just record today, but we all met up in person and we played like in person, which was really cool. And then yeah, I just got like roped, not roped into, but everyone was like let's get dinner and I was like okay. So that was fun. That was fun. Yeah, I haven't seen like one person from the group in like since COVID. So it was nice seeing everyone and just like hanging out in a group. Says the introvert in me. But yeah. Okay. So the this or that basically like we offer you two different things and you kind of just choose like which one you prefer. Pretty sure you know these foods. Okay, so the first one is Gan Chao Ngau Hao, like the beef stir fry, chow fun, and the second one is Sing Zhao Chao Mai, the Singapore stir fry noodles.
Oh, that's very difficult to choose. But I do like sub tao. No, the gong tao makes me eat hay.
Wait,
So I don't know. really? I've never had subtitle before. Yeah, it's just more saucy.
Okay.
But I don't know. The other one's really nice. Both of them kind of. I do not know. Do I have to choose?
You don't have to
It really
choose.
depends on my mood. Do I feel something like Okay. savory or something that's like, I don't know, they're both savory. Oh my gosh, I'm bad at making decisions.
Okay, while you think, we can explain like what they are to like people who are listening who don't know what they are. So the beef one is basically like a flat rice noodle. It's like thick and it's just like stir-fried with beef in this like sauce. And then the Singaporean stir-fry noodle is like the really thin rice noodles with like it's kind of like I don't know what I'm comparing it to, but it's really thin rice noodles with like a curry sauce. I don't know how to describe that sauce.
I feel like it's curry powder-ish because it's really dry too. It's very powdery.
Yeah, and it usually has like pork or yeah, char siu, and then it usually has like egg and shrimp and like yeah, a lot of toppings. So,
I think I'll probably choose Tsing Tao Tao Mei just because I like the shrimp. It's not
It
too
is really
heavy.
good. Yeah.
Yeah. I would choose Gan Chao Alcohol, beef chow fun, because, okay, this is the non-vegetarian summer speaking, okay, before I turned vegetarian. But yeah, I just really like Gan Chao Alcohol. And Gan Chao Alcohol with sriracha is the best. But
I've
it
never
has to
had it
be
with
like,
sriracha.
really? I love spicy food, that's why. Yeah, I add sriracha to everything.
See, I love spicy food, but I don't like sriracha. I don't know why.
Really?
Yeah. But yeah, I think I'm gonna choose Saint Zhao Tao Mai too. It's just it's such a
Why
staple.
am I always the
The
one?
odd one out. Yeah, like my mom always orders Saint Zhao Tao Mai whenever we eat out. Two. So, 2-1 again, Summer. It's
Again, wow. So I'm just
okay.
unique.
You are unique.
Okay. Okay, cool. So now it's time to introduce Raymond. Raymond, do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. Hi, my name is Raymond, and I currently reside in the San Gabriel Valley. Originally born in Hong Kong, moved here when I was six. I graduated last year from Biola University in kinesiology, and then I swam there too as an athlete. And after that, throughout the quarantine, I was able to kind of get some traction on social media, and then that ultimately was the first step to what entirely changed my life. Yeah, so that's a good intro, I guess.
A good brief summary. And like I guess we met Raymond basically how we met like every single guest that we had on the season. We
I
just like
know.
reposted a TikTok and then they like saw it and we reached out, which is really cool. But yeah.
I was thinking which TikTok is it? Is I think the one is the
I think
one
he was
that
like
we like.
teaching people like a swear word or something.
Yeah, like something about shitting. Like are you all seeing
Oh
that one?
that was a while ago. My God. Yeah.
The TikTok algorithm works in mysterious ways.
For real.
But yeah, and I feel like this is like a really interesting topic because Summer and I have been wanting to like discuss our moving experience too, and I feel like we can also really relate to you, being moving from Hong Kong to the US. So do you remember much about like when you moved because you were so young? You were six.
Briefly, I was six, so I came here, I think, in second grade, and I mean, I don't remember too much because I mean, I was six, but I mean, I do remember that, like, clearly there's just sort of some differences. For example, like, I went to like a private school in Hong Kong, and then where we like use different slangs, like, oh, like, can I go to the toilet or do I have rubbish, you know, stuff like that.
Exactly.
And then
Yeah,
when I
yeah.
came, yeah, and when I came here, like, people would make fun of me and stuff. Like, oh, you want to go in the toilet?
Oh
Like
my
stuff
God, the same
like
thing
that.
happened to me
Aww.
Yeah. But besides that, I don't really remember too much. So,
And like
yeah.
626 is pretty Asian
Yeah.
too.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my gosh, yeah, that brought back memories of like when, because I went to like a local school. And so when the teacher would come in, everyone would like have to stand up and like bow to like greet the teacher. And like we'd like greet them so like in such a way we'd be like, "Good morning, Miss." But like we'd like drag it out like that. I don't know how we did that. And then when I came for high school, like the teachers just like walked in and I was like, "Do we not need to greet the people who are teaching us?"
Exactly. Yeah, it's weird. Like, so from what you remember, like, was it hard to adjust to the culture? And if it's not for you, like, maybe do you remember how your parents adjust to the culture?
So my dad went to university in Canada, and then my mom went to university here but came in high school, and both of them moved back after schooling. So I don't think it was very difficult for them. I mean, maybe for my dad. I remember my dad saying that like he throughout his whole college experience, he never went back home because it was too expensive, because he grew up in a very poor family. So for him, like, he had a lot of like homesickness and stuff like that. But my mom's family did move here. I think initially, actually, before her parents came, she moved here and stayed with her aunts and uncles who owned a motel. So when she first came here, like, she was just like a motel cleaning girl. And then her parents came, and then she stayed with them. So I don't know too much because I haven't really talked to them that much, but I just know like the brief summary of it. But as for me, I don't think it was like too difficult, just because, you know, granted, I was really young. And yeah, so and moving to, especially to like the San Gabriel Valley, like, didn't really seem like a big difference, except for, you know, just the vocabulary and maybe like small little like social norms differences between like Hong Kong and here.
Yeah, that's so interesting to like compare because I feel like I moved to a pretty white area, like a very white and like Asian area in LA. And just even then, like I feel, well, okay, granted we were older too, so I feel like the differences were bigger, but still, like that's so interesting to hear. I wonder if it would like I would feel the same if I moved to like the 626 like as a high schooler. But Summer, did you it was your area or your school, was it Asian, like mostly Asian? Or
yeah, it was mostly Asian. It was like 80% Asian. So but yeah, like you said, I think there's still like some cultural differences. Like even though there are a lot of Asians and there are actually a lot of immigrants there, but there are a lot of like mainland Chinese immigrants. So I think there are still a little bit of a cultural difference there. But overall, I don't think it was like too drastic and I would get laughed at or get discriminated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But when, like, I guess when you were growing up in the 626, like, did you feel like it was easy to identify more as Asian American?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, definitely, like, as Summer said, too, like, my school was predominantly Asian. It was majority, actually, Asian. And so being Asian wasn't really, or ethnicity never really was a big thing to me because I was the majority. And it didn't really, like, dawn on me that I was different until, you know, college where I was, like, an actual minority. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess that's a perfect segue into college.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you went, did you go to a pretty white, what is it called, white-dominated institution?
Yeah, yeah. So, I went to a private Christian school called Biola. It's a Christian school located in La Mirada. It's near Fullerton. And, yeah, it definitely was a predominantly, like, white school. And I was, like, one of, like, the few, like, minority athletes. So, yeah. But, I mean, I think my first semester was a kind of a big transitional period for me because I was, you know, it's sad to say, and I want to premise with this that, like, I definitely love my school. Like, I love Biola. I, like, won't take back any of the experiences, and I'm very grateful for every person that I've met there and all that, you know, because it's ultimately has built me to who I am today. And although it's, like, you know, like, overall, I love the school, but there were instances mm-hmm. and small little times where there's different microaggressions. And at the time, I didn't even know what microaggressions were. Like talks mm-hmm. about race and what it meant to be Asian or a minority wasn't a thing. It wasn't that popular, I guess, maybe in my world at least. And so to be like blunt, I guess, like going into college as a swimmer, like I was reminded every day that I was different through some through some form of microaggression, whether it's calling me fried rice or calling me, you know, like saying just racially charged, like backhanded jokes, things mm-hmm. like that. And I can't really like name any, but all I could say is just like my Instagram handle, which is Daddy Dumpling, actually derived from me making fun of myself. So that way I could appeal to white people. So that way I make fun of myself before they make fun of me. So that way I could fit in. That's ultimately, you know, like how I came up with my username. And now I use it differently because you know how like the whole atmosphere of like the social, you know, and the social atmosphere has changed to a place where like minorities are kind of being brought to a different level. And so I'm taking back that name and using it to my advantage and using it to what I want it to be rather than something that I use to kind of like put myself down. But, you know, there's just some instances, I don't want to say like every single, I was like being racist, like picked on every single day, but there were definitely like some particular people and instances where it's like, oh wow, I do feel different. And I think that's a whole nother conversation to like get really, really deep into that on exactly it's like, how did I come out of that? Because yeah, I don't want to go too much into it, but pretty much definitely before did feel such a big difference between like me and like white people. But now it's just like with the self-love and appreciation for culture and also confidence, it's like now I don't see it as shameful for being Asian. It's like before I wanted to be white because then it would be easier to fit in. But then I stick out like a sore thumb. Mm-hmm. So yeah, a lot of like growth and maturity to where I actually love myself now.
Mm-hmm. Did you, like, practice a lot of Chinese culture, too, growing up, like, with your family and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, my parents predominantly speak Cantonese to me. I mean, they both speak English. But, yeah, I definitely do speak a lot of Cantonese at home and in Chinese culture. Like, I would say my parents are traditional, but they're also somewhat assimilated, not like second generation, because I guess I'm technically first generation. It's a move from when I was young. But they're kind of like, they're not super traditional, but they're not like fully assimilated.
Like 1.5.
Yes.
Jen.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know. I feel the same way. I'm like, I don't know what I technically fit into, because both my parents also like went to school, or like their families moved to like the US and then they moved back to Hong Kong. And then they didn't move back here, but now I'm here. So I'm like, what am I? But yeah. And did you have like Asian American clubs or like cultural clubs too at Biola? And did you, like, did that help
with? There were. But the Asians which are at my school were predominantly Korean. And I also felt ashamed to be Asian, so I didn't want to associate myself with Asians before. I would actually want, I prided myself on being that one Asian kid that didn't hang out with Asian kids. And you know, it's like I had a lot of bitterness towards the culture before. So,
yeah.
And it's hard to say it. And I mean that, I mean this with like the most, like utmost humility to me, for me to even like say it out loud. But yeah, I was definitely ashamed to be Asian before. I didn't want to be associated with quote unquote like the fobs or like the Koreans or the other Asians. I wanted to be like, oh, that cool dude. But it just sucks because like before they didn't know me. I was like, oh, just Raymond. It's like, oh, Raymond, like the Asian, maybe. Oh, like the Asian dude. Or the Asian swimmer or whatever. I guess I don't know. What? Yeah.
Yeah, that makes like a lot of sense. I feel like coming from a predominantly like homogenous society, it's like very normal to not like it, because like you don't want to. It's you don't want to be the same as everyone else, or like you learn to not like it. And I definitely felt the same way before like moving. Like I was like, I don't like being Chinese. Like why can't I be more Western? Like, not that I like pursued that or did anything about it, but like leaving home and like moving to the US for high school like made me like my identity more. Like I feel like it's very valid, and like I totally understand like how those feelings come about.
Yeah. And I think that, like what you said, a lot of times when we move from being in the majority group and then we move to another country, we'll naturally be drawn to moving towards the majority group because you want to hold that power to ourselves. Like, I also feel that when I was in high school, I think, well, because there are a lot of Asians in my high school, but I remember back then I would want to like hang out with Asians who grew up here because they're more westernized, and that like makes me feel like, oh, like I should be with them, like I didn't want to speak like Chinese or Cantonese to other Asians. I just want to speak in English because I'm like, oh, I'm in America, I should like learn my English and stuff. But yeah, it wasn't until like senior year and college that I really fully embrace my Chinese identity.
Yeah, you saying that just made me think of like how this is kind of like fucked up, but like when I was in Hong Kong, I was always like I can only date somewhat, like I can't date a local Hong Kong, you know, guy. I would have to like, I want to date like either an international school or like an ABC or something like that, because I just felt like, I don't know why, like it's kind of fucked up, but yeah, that made me think of that. And it's just, it happens to everyone, and it's like, I guess that's how being a minority, like, you know, like I feel like other minority groups relate to this too, like everyone just wants to fit in and assimilate.
And I have a question for Raymond too. So coming out of that college experience, how did that shape your Asian American identity?
I think definitely, I mean, like food, right? It's like I came home from college every weekend just to eat Asian food, because I It's just a part of me. And I think it was also in conjunction with all the Black Lives Matter stuff, which made me really start reframing and rethinking what I meant, like, to have different like ethnicities and races in my mind. And then from there started like, what are my prejudices and and judgments on other ethnicities that made me like feel about a certain group of people. It's like I'm a recovering racist, right? It's like I was, and I don't blame anybody. It's just the way it was. But growing up, it's just like you're accustomed to think that certain groups of people are this certain way. And for me to think, when all those like social justice stuff like sparked the debate, then I spent a lot of time in thinking and reframing. And that's when I come to like the self-love of embracing who I was, and also starting to reflect about like my college experience, about those like different micro traumas to how they kind of made me think about myself and why was I so ashamed to be myself. And I think a lot of it's also tied to, I don't want to say like a lot of people have this experience, but I'm sure a lot of people are relating to it. But it also comes down to a lot of my own character flaws and a lot of things which I'm working through and have worked through a lot. With like my insecurities and my lack of confidence and the desire to always want to please everybody to a fault, to a point where you kind of don't even know yourself. I didn't know myself. All I only cared about is what other people thought of me. And so my self-perception was based off of my idea of what other people thought of me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was only through, so it's like throughout the pandemic, it's like I really did learn a lot about myself. As you really just sit and reflect because there's nothing else to do. So it was really, really all that stuff, all the social justice and Black Lives Matter stuff that kind of brought me to a place of self-love. Mm-hmm. And not only in the sense mm-hmm. of like my ethnicity, but also just who I am as a person. And then, which also leads me to maybe, I don't know if that's the next point, to like the idea of career and stuff. But whatever your next question is.
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. No, that's like, I feel like, yeah, even though the pandemic like stopped the world, it like paused us too. And it really makes you think and reflect. I guess the one good thing out of the pandemic is that. And so also I was like, I don't know when you started using TikTok. Cause I don't think like TikTok got super, super like hype until like super, super heightened during the pandemic. Like I was forced to download TikTok during the pandemic because I was like, what do I do with my time? Yeah, so did you also start like gaining followers and like creating content during the pandemic?
I fell into social media on accident. So, yeah, I downloaded TikTok in like July of last year. So it's only been a little bit over a year, and then caught traction by, I think, November. You know, and I say that I fell into it on accident because it's like one day I was like, oh, there's a trend. I'm just going to make a video. Haha. And did it. And then it like my first video that like did well was like 200K. I was like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. And then they reposted on like subtle Asian traits. I was like, oh, my God. And then my whole world just like, yeah. But and then I started just like riding that wave on like the Cantonese stuff, and then more of my videos started getting reposted on like subtle Asian traits or subtle Cantonese traits, and then I felt like I was on top of the world, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And like the whole, my whole journey with social media, to me it feels like it's over because I've kind of stepped onto a different stone, different island now. But definitely taught me a lot of different lessons, because it's like I got really burnt out, like really burnt out. Because I felt like I was obligated to make content, and I had people to serve, and then it takes out your enjoyment of it. And then from there, you get numb. There's a point in time where I was actually numb to the numbers because I was I still am jaded a little bit. It's like to the point where if a video does well, you feel a sense of relief. Like you don't even. It, and then when it does bad, you feel totally like crap. So, and then when you're gaining a lot of followers, like they're just numbers now. They don't mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
But then you keep doing the same thing and it doesn't work anymore. Then you just feel like crap by yourself. And then at the time too, at the beginning of my social media stuff, it's like I still have very, very low like self-love, self-confidence. And that stuff was literally like the thing that kind of kickstarted my whole journey with like reframing what I thought about myself and what I'm capable of. And it was only, I would say it's like a catalyst. It was a catalyst for me to, as I said, rethink myself. It's like, oh, I'm getting all these comments saying like, they're saying all these good things about me, but I don't believe any of them. Like you could hear and people could tell you all these things, but if you don't believe in yourself, then it doesn't matter. So yeah, so it really started, my whole reframing of like self-love started with social media. And then from there, I started rethinking. It's like, oh, what is true? What do I think of myself? What do other people think of me? Why do I think this way? But yeah, so I don't want to talk in a circle.
Yeah, so you talked about how social media has affected you. So how do you think it has helped you to shape your Asian American identity too?
Yeah, I mean, I never spoke a lick of Cantonese in college just because no one, I mean, some people cared to like learn a little bit, little words, and that was nice, but it was more for like memes. But I never really realized like there's power within language until after started posting those videos. And then I started receiving messages from around the world telling me about how much impact that my videos were having on them. And I would never realize that like I would make this kid who's a minority in like the Midwest feel like he's finally represented and heard, or like another Asian American or just another Asian like European person across the world who said that like my videos were the first thing that made them laugh in months after their dad was diagnosed with colon cancer. It's like then I started receiving these type of messages where it's like I'm giving them meaning onto a platform where there's no representation from like Cantonese speakers. So then my mission became bigger, and then it started reframing. It's like, okay, this isn't about me. It's more about other people. But then there it falls into like the line of feeling obligated to make things. And then you kind of get burnt out and you don't take care of yourself. And that's what happened to me. I mean, definitely language. It's like, I didn't realize that there's power in Cantonese. I didn't realize there's so many Cantonese speakers in the world that we're all just scattered, especially with all like politics, how everyone's just moving everywhere. But then it's like to connect everyone with like similar, with a language and also the culture. So that made me kind of realize it's like, oh, within the community, like I am appreciated. And I have worth within this community. I am accepted and I'm celebrated, which is something that felt foreign and new to me. Yeah. So.
Oh, that's beautiful. And we literally, the next question, we wanted to ask you why your handle was Daddy Dumpling.
Oh, yeah. So it's funny. I'll tell you the story. I was making dumplings in the dorm kitchen for me and my friends. And then we're talking about how girlfriends call their boyfriends daddy. And then I was like, oh, Daddy Dumpling. And then it just stopped.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
But yeah, you did say that like your content obviously has a lot of impact on a lot of Cantonese speakers around the world. And like, I feel like there's not that many Cantonese TikTokers, and maybe I haven't found any, but there really isn't that many like Cantonese TikTokers or just like people who really speak Cantonese. Like there is, but like compared to like people who speak Mandarin, like, or other, you know, like Cantonese is not, there's not that many. So yeah, it's really comforting to see Cantonese TikToks on my For You page.
Yeah.
But I just want to ask, what was like one of the most wholesome things that happened on TikTok, like whether that be like a conversation or like a comment?
I think there was a point in time for like a month or a month and a half where I streamed every single night at a certain time. And then I started a community, and there was like 20 people in this community where they would just log on, and it was just me just hanging out with them every single night. Whether it be me like telling stories about my ambitions or what I thought, or like talking out loud, or I would serenade them on the guitar and sing. That was probably the most wholesome thing. And then I started, then they started like sending me stuff.
Oh.
Yeah. Like they started like postmating me food. And aww. Then they came to like my friend's store.
Oh.
Yeah. Stuff like that. So.
That's so cute.
And then I stopped streaming and then I fell apart. But besides that, they're still great though.
Yeah. But it happened.
That's still awesome. Oh, that's
so cute. Yeah. Postmating food. That's my love language right there. But yeah. So like from TikTok and social media. So now you're more into acting too and modeling. So did social media like kind of pave way for that too?
Yeah. So I mean, so my story is that social media started picking up when I started my grad program for my master's of kinesiology. And then from there, once I had traction on social media, I made my friend was opening up a store called Vintage Hype in Alhambra. It's like a vintage store for like vintage streetwear store that sells like t-shirt and stuff like that. And he was just opening up. He's my age, our age. And then like, he's from Hong Kong too. And his mom's like also an immigrant, like his mom's immigrant. And I was also really close to him. So I decided, I was like, oh, let me make a video for you just to see like, why not? So I went to his store before it opened. I shot video, like really quick TikTok, posted it, had like 200 something K. And then the first day that we opened, we had like a line for like 3 hours, an hour long. So like our grand opening was like huge. A lot of people came. And then from there, then I kind of stuck with him. Shout out to Eric. That's his name, Eric. Eric Lee. So then I started, I just stuck around, like helping with the store.
Hi, Eric Lee.
Yeah. stuck around, helping the store and like helping get inventory, you know, just kind of be part of the team, part of the family. And then from there, eventually he hired other people. And namely one of them was Brian. And then Brian is the person who asked me to join his production team. And so his production team at the time was called the Clubhouse Collective. It was like a collective of like creatives, which made music videos, photo shoots, like graphic design. They made clothes, like they did anything creative. And I do credit like Brian for taking me into the creative industry because it's like he invited me to join him. Then I started from there experiencing what it's like to do things outside of STEM. Like these were people who were, he started his first business at 18 and then he started making clothes and they learned photography, they learned video, they learned graphic designing, like everything like that. And they taught me what it meant to kind of live. Like, what is it outside of this STEM bubble? I remember going to like this trip where we shot a music video for Donnie. Check him out, Donnie Daydream on Spotify. My boy Donnie. Anyway, we're shooting a music video for him. Shouting out my friends. I love my friends. We went to Utah, the Utah Salt Flats. And I've never really stepped foot out of the 66. It's like we went there and it's just like we're in the middle of nowhere in the salt flats shooting a music video, like calculating like the rain to see if we have the conditions to shoot it. And then from there, then we went to the Mojave Desert and then we shot music video there. I went to like different sand dunes and I was just like, dude, like people do this stuff. People don't just like go to school and like do like people just go out and just have fun and they explore like the US, you know, other states and different landscapes and stuff. I was like, whoa, there's a whole world outside of what I know, which sparked my curiosity on like, oh, wow, the world's so big. I wonder what I could do. And that in conjunction with like, oh, like, how was I a completely normal person? I still am a completely normal person who caught like traction on social media. Why? What is there about me that made me different? And then like, why am I special? And then that with in conjunction is like, oh, there's so much curiosity out here. And then from all that, it's like the self-love. It's like, what am I capable of? So instead of being behind the camera, then I started going in front of the camera. Then I started doing modeling stuff. It's just like, oh, how do I model? Modeling's freaking hard. Oh my God. Modeling's hard. It's like, oh, the people make it look so effortless. It's like, okay, then step in front of the camera and try to do it. Like, oh, I'm so awkward. I'll pose. modeling is hard. Very hard. So I started doing that, and then now I'm like starting to learn more about photography, because it's like it comes hand in hand. Like, people who know how to model, I would say, may perhaps know how to take pictures too, about angles and stuff like that. Now they're teaching me like a little bit of color theory, how to edit things on Lightroom, like cropping, like why you do different things. So it's like my creativity is they taught me that I'm actually creative. They taught me how to express myself and what it means to kind of live one day at a time, instead of like, which no hate to people who do this. It's like, I totally understand. Like, I was there, and I just in a different lifestyle now, but it's like, instead of planning to go to school for 8 years, it's like, what can you do today that makes you happy? It's like, what does it mean to express yourself? What is expression to you? Like, who are you? And these were questions that they helped me answer, and they definitely like taught me this stuff too. And then more recently, I mean, like, I felt a lot of FOMO because all my friends are starting companies, like all starting like company, I mean, clothing brands. We bought a screen press and we started printing clothes. Then we started making clothes and stuff. Then I'm like, oh man, I want to start a company. But then after thinking about this stuff, it's like, oh, I'm just FOMOing into it. And then I found out that I actually enjoy acting. And the reason why is because freshman year of college, I had two friends who are like in the cinema stuff, and then they were writing like this series about a collegiate bowling team, and they wrote a character after me. Our freshman year of college, and they wrote this throughout college, and they saw that I was starting to do this stuff, and so they asked me, oh, do you want to act as your character now that you're in this stuff? 5 years later, after they wrote it, and I was like, yeah. So I started acting in this. I literally jumped right in. I was like, I don't know how to act. And they're like, oh, it's a character about you. You don't have to act, but you still need to know how to act. Mm-hmm. And then I really liked it. And then from there, I'm just like, I want to do this. And I really enjoy this. And so after a lot of deep thought on what I thought myself, like my newfound self-love and confidence, it's like, where am I in this world? Like, who am I? Like, I know who I am now. And for me, it just stems not really in the picture anymore for me, because now I feel like I learned so much that is outside of this, that I'm willing to take this chance to kind of make it in this industry. And so I told my parents one day after a lot of thought, because after a lot of thought, it's like, I'm going to take a break from school, because I feel as if my gut is telling me as if there's these opportunities which are going to happen, and they're going to come my way, and school's holding me back right now. It's not making me happy. Mm-hmm. And obviously they didn't take it well, because it's like, why do you have to do everything that makes you happy? You know, it's like, how about your future? We spent all this money on this already. It's like, do you know what you're doing? You're just like a kid. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone knows what I'm talking about in terms of those things, but I still did it, because it's like, I'm not a kid anymore. I never had the freedom to make my own decisions. And I'm gonna add this in too. It's just like, throughout the pandemic, I smoked a lot of weed. I smoked a lot of weed, and didn't work out that much towards the end of the term. Starting this year, I didn't and like work out a lot. I was confused because I didn't know what I wanted to do anymore. It's like, oh, I know I could do all these things, but yet I'm still in school. So like the insecurity of my career path kind of led me to uncertainty, and then hearing all the noises from like outside. My therapist told me, your anxiety is triggered because you don't have your own decisions. You don't know what you want, because you're too busy thinking about everyone else. But what do you think? What do you think? It's like, what do you believe about yourself? Because she asked me a question of like my traumas, and I would tell stories about everybody else, but I would never answer about mine. And so she told me, your anxiety is a part of it. Sounds like it's because you don't have your own opinions. And so I stopped. I was like, dang, you're right. So then it's like the question on make. And then I started making my own decisions. What do I think? You have to stop. Think. It's like, what do I think? What do I believe? How do I feel about this? And then from there, it's like, I decided to take a break from school. And ever since I did that, things have been moving for me so quickly. And I'll give you a timeline. And also, sidetrack, I am an actor, but I'm a very, very beginning actor. And I implore and I encourage people to own, I must swear, but own your shit. As in, like, if, like, you don't just take photos, you're a photographer. You don't ride a bike, you're a cyclist. You don't just swim in a pool, you're a swimmer. It's like, own your craft, have confidence in your skill. Like, you are that title. It's like, don't have that insecurity of like, oh, I'm not good enough, so therefore I can't label myself this way. Like, I'm calling myself an actor because I am acting. Like, I, even though I know I'm in the very, very beginning of it, I'm still acting. And even though I know only a little bit of modeling, I'm still doing it. And that's why I'm a model. And no, in no way, shape, or form, am I professional any of these things. But it's like my thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a side note. But to give you a timeline on like things on where I am right now, is that this less than 4 weeks ago, I went in for a thing called Central Casting. And so Central Casting is a company which casts people for background work, for extra work. So you go into their office, you go into their system, and then when there are projects, they book you. They send you a availability check. Like, oh, do you want to work this TV show as this role on this day? You need to get a COVID test or whatever. And then you say yes, they book you, and then you do background work. So last week was my third week. And I'm starting my fourth week this week. And I encourage people to try to experience like this stuff, because like being on set is a whole different experience. It's like there's heavy, heavy equipment. Like how is the way that a set is run? Like, what is the film industry? What is the creative industry? Because I feel like a lot of Asian kids are stuck in the stems, but it's like the world is so mm-hmm. much bigger than what you think it is. So, and also right now it's like, I've spoken to my other friends who've been doing background work for a long time, who are white, and they said, right now, you are in such high demand. Like, and I didn't believe her before she told me. Before I did all the background stuff, I was like, really? Are you sure? It's like, I'm just a dude. But I signed up on a Thursday. I was booked by that Monday and that Tuesday night, and then the Thursday. And then the week next week, I was booked Wednesday through Friday. And then last week, I was booked Wednesday through Friday. And then this week, I'm booked Tuesday to Thursday. And I could have gone Friday, but I chose not to. But it's like, I'm getting booked left and right now. And it's because the film industry is changing, because Asians are actually being celebrated and desired in this industry. I feel wanted. I feel like they want me there. And that's why I encourage people to like try it. And dude, background work is so easy. Just don't look into the camera and just do your role. Like, if you're a person sitting at a cafe, just be a person sitting in the cafe. Just don't look into the camera. You know, you don't have to act a lot. You're in the background. You're just a blur most of the time. But just being on set and experiencing what it's like is very, it's great.
Mm-hmm.
So those are background work. And then now I'm doing also short films. Or I just finished my first short film. I got cast in a USC Masters of like film something. I was playing like the ex-boy. Although I was playing as like the toxic boyfriend. But then we just wrapped that. But I was so surprised that I got that. And the thing that I also want to like aside for other people is just like, literally, you will never get to a destination if you don't take a step. Like mm-hmm. shooter, like I'm gonna say a bunch of quotes. That's all mean the same thing. Like shooter shoot. Like you literally will never get there unless you do it. Mm-hmm. Right. So I've applied to so many different things. I've gone like maybe a 5% like reply rate. But the thing mm-hmm. is, I wouldn't even get a 5% reply rate if I don't apply. So whether it's scholarships or jobs or anything, it's like you need to get over yourself and your insecurities before you even try. It's like, give yourself the opportunity to try. Give yourself opportunities to have opportunities. It's like there's a world inside your head, which is so much like it's not reality. And that's like that's like a whole nother topic on what it means to have like your confidence in yourself. Don't doubt yourself and don't stop yourself before you even try new things. And so I was like, dude, I'm just going to apply for this. And then I did it. And then I got it. I was like, holy crap, I'm actually doing it. And then I'm keep going and I'm keep getting better. And then when I'm on set, I'm just so happy to be there. And maybe it's because I'm new to industry for background work, but everyone complains. They complain about everything. It's like, oh, we have to leave this time to wake up this time, blah, 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 blah. Oh, I'm hungry. Like I'm just happy to be there because maybe my journey was a little longer to where I finally found where I wanted to be. And or maybe it's because I'm new and I haven't experienced what it's like to be taken advantage of in terms of like your time or whatever. But when I'm on set, I also do notice that people, and I don't mean this in like a conceited way, but people kind of gravitate towards me. It's because I'm having so much fun on set. I'm cracking jokes. I'm still doing my job. I'm cracking jokes. I'm being myself. It's like I'm like dancing around. It's like I'm so happy to be there. And that leads me to kind of like the next point. It's like, where do I see myself in the future? Do I have hope? Like, yes. And will I get there? If I never try, I won't. And right now I'm young enough. Like 22 is so young. I'm almost 23. Mm-hmm. It's like, why have my parents kind of set the expectations that I have to have my whole life together now? It's like, for me, I was in the master's program starting when I was 21. Straight out of college, went to my master's program. And then from there, it's like, I would have graduated my master's by 23. When the median age is maybe 23, 24, 25. So it's like, even if I take 2 years off, I'm still maybe the median age. I'm already ahead of the curve. Why do I feel like I have to have my life together by 23, 22? It's like, I don't. 22 is so young. Like Gary Vee is right when he says that you could sit on your ass from 20 to 30, you could wake up at 32 or whatever and start. He started when he was 32. Now he's a multimillionaire. It's like, we have time to live. And I'm speaking that in like a place of like privilege to where, like, I'm very, very privileged. I'm so thankful for my family for providing me with my basic needs. So that way I don't have to get a job so that I have to pay rent. It's like, I live at home with my family. I'm so privileged. And that is coming out of a privileged place. But I also implore to other people, it's like, enjoy life, live today. Cause like, I mean, it's super cheesy. Like tomorrow is not guaranteed. So that's why enjoy today. Have fun today. What do you like doing today? Take care of yourself. Like, don't look too far in the future, because if you look too far, it's anxiety. If you look too far back, then it's depression. Like, live in the present now. It's like, what can you do now that makes you happy? And for me, I kind of made it like maybe an exaggerated step to where I decided, quote unquote, maybe drop out of my program. That's the goal. I don't want to go back. But for me, the leap of faith is dropping out of my program. And now I'm doing it. It's not like I'm not doing it. And I could say this is the happiest and most free I've ever been. People ask me, how are you, Raymond? And I tell them, I feel free. Like, I'm finally free because I'm doing things that I want to do. And then my parents are slowly getting around to it. Like, my dad always says, oh, let's enjoy Mingxinga. Oh, Lichowa. It's like, he mocks me. So he says, translating, it's like, oh, you're trying to be a superstar? Oh yeah, go do it. Yeah, you can do it. Like, he says this so sarcastically. And my mom just asked me, it's like, this isn't sustainable. But then I'm just like, mom, I'm 22. It's just like, I don't have the same problems as you guys did. And you guys were immigrants. You guys had to make ends meet, and that's why you had to get jobs, and that's why you had to do these things. But for us, it's like, our new generation has different problems from you, and that's why we think differently, and that's why we want to do things differently, because we have one, you worked so hard to give me the privilege to make my own decisions, but now you're not letting me make my own decisions. It's like, where's that? And ultimately, that comes out of a place of love and their experience. It's like, for them, success and happiness is stability. Financial stability. But for me, it's different. For me now, it's happiness. It's like, I want to be happy. And what does it mean to be happy? Who am I? And and I've been talking to a lot of other 22-year-olds, and maybe you guys have like the same like experience, but it's like, 22 is an interesting age. It was trending on Twitter a while ago, like at 22, dot, dot, dot. And people are telling that 22 is such a pivotal time point in their life. It is like the gap between like a system and then the real world. It's like, what mm-hmm. do we know now? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, like I still say, but before it was like, I was going through an existential crisis. I don't know what I want to do in my life, and things we shouldn't need to know what we need to do with my life because we're 22. We mm-hmm. were only 22. We could live twice our age and would still only be 24 or 44. Like that is mm-hmm. not that is not that old. It's like, why in time do we, when did we ever have to, why do we need to grow up so fast? Where is our youth? Why can't we enjoy life now? So that is kind of everything, I guess. Mm-hmm. I kind of go on a lot of rambles, but I'm looking into acting classes. I am applying to more things. I'm going on photo shoots with myself. I'm paying to go on photo shoots to take pictures of myself so that way I could submit them. I'm going, like, I have an idea in my head and I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm moving into a direction.
And that's all we can do. I mean, like, yeah, no, it's like so like amazing to hear, because I feel like all these things like appeared in front of you and it's like you just have to take it and you love it. Okay, I guess to end, we just want to ask about your recommendations in the SGV. Do you have like your favorite restaurant?
Yeah, I'll give two. Okay, so my favorite Bumbuwe place, which is spicy beef noodle soup, Vietnamese, is on Ooh. Valley. It's called Na Trang, and it's not how you pronounce it. Na Trang.
Yeah, I know which one you're talking about. Yeah,
NHA TRANG on Valley in San Gabriel. That was bomb. And then there's a new food hall opening up in San Gabriel called Blossom Hall Food Hall. I think it's like Ooh. 11 or 13 food vendors. It's like a Rodeo 39, but in San Gabriel, right next to the Mission. They're opening up soon. I think soft opening sometime in October, and I may or may not also be bartending there. So,
love that.
Yeah. So those two things.
Cool.
Come say hi to me, and yeah.
When does it open?
I think soft opening's in October, but then I think grand opening's probably gonna be sometime in late October, if not November.
Okay. Maybe next year I'll stop. I'm going back to Hong Kong soon. Maybe next year when I come back, I will stop by. But yeah, that's it for this episode.
I feel like I got so much like motivation and wisdom from you.
I was like, that's a TED Talk. TED Talk on its own.
Ooh. Yeah.
I
got into it.
Yes, we love it though. Yeah, so thank you for being on. Oh, do you want to plug your social media?
Oh, my social medias are just Daddy Dumpling.
Yes.
Yes.
If you want that Kanto content, go follow him on TikTok.
If I make them anymore.
True.
We'll see.
No pressure.
If I'm in the mood for it. Mm-hmm. But
or just like watch the old ones.
Yes.
Okay, thanks for listening, everyone.
Bye.
Bye
everybody.